What number is this, Chip?
Episode 26, Monkeys in a Ghost Town. What the monkeys were doing that week, and more.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
Zilch. Zilch.
You're listening to Zilch, a monkeys podcast.
And now, it's time for Zilch.
Z-I-L-C-H. Hey, it's time for Zilch.
Welcome to Zilch. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, and I am joined by our esteemed panel. We have the lovely Craig Cohen with us.
Oh, thank you, Ken.
The lovely Melanie Mitchell.
Hi.
And the lovely Sarah Clark.
Howdy.
I am the lovely Ken Mills, and that's our show. We're just getting started. It's been a while since we got to get together and monkey around like this. Today on our show, we have the color cast commentary for which episode, Melanie?
Monkeys in a Ghost Town.
So we look forward to that, and I'm going to be part of that mix today for Jeff Hewlett, who is on assignment. Earth, yes. Which is a Star Trek reference for anybody that listens to the tricorder transmission. I'll be stepping in, and I'm kind of nervous, guys, so we'll see how we do.
We'll all hold hands, Ken.
Excellent. And we have some great news since episode 24 went up. Annabelle Jones got a recording contract with Atlantic Records, so congrats to her.
Yeah, that's so
fantastic.
Awesome.
Woohoo!
And I won't say it's because she was on Zilch, but no,
there is an interesting correlation.
I'm just kidding.
Couldn't wait.
Our last episode was part two of our look back at Davy's life, celebrating Davy, and folks seemed to really enjoy that. And one thing that didn't make the show, I just wanted to bring this up. I was talking to Marty Ross of the New Monkees. We had him on episode 19. He was talking about how interesting it was that when you first see the Monkees TV show, what do you see? When you first see the opening credits, what do you see? What's the first thing?
Isn't Davy's head hitting the bell?
Yeah.
Or Davy dropping his gun belt, depending on which season you're watching.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But it's strange because when you think about it, when the Monkees first started, we were talking about Davy Jones passing, and he brought up this very interesting part that when you first heard about the Monkees, it might have been on radio and you heard Mickey Dolenz's voice, but the first episode that you saw was really Davy centric.
It was Royal Flush.
And it's kind of weird because you see Davy and then the starting of the show comes on and you see Davy for the first 7 seconds or so, and it's like Mickey was the voice of the Monkees, but that Davy was the face of the Monkees. So I always thought that was a really good observation from Marty Ross. So
I think Marty's got something there, yeah.
Well, we haven't done this in a while. It's time to jump into the Monkees mailbag. Take it away.
P.O. Box 9847.
All right. Melanie, would you like to kick off the first iTunes review?
I'll be happy to, Ken. This is a 5-star rating coming from Stephen, Georgia. And it says, your podcast is awesome. Thank you so much for the great shows, interviews, guests, history, and music. Grew up with the Monkees on Saturday mornings. Loving the new journey. Steve.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Steve. And I thought the title of his review, Long Live the Monkees, was pretty cool. So, long may they live. So that's awesome. Well, I'm going to read this one, and it is from Rocket Dog 2000, another 5-star review. And, shucks, it says, another great podcast from Ken Mills. I was quite excited to find this awesome Monkees podcast from Ken Mills, who also leads a couple of other great podcasts. I enjoy the podcast and Cheap Talk, which is our cheap trick show. Excellent interviews, audio clips, and great conversations about one of my all-time favorite bands. Informative and just a joy to listen to. Particularly love the new Monkees episode. Keep up the great work. And speaking of Marty Ross, a lot of people seem to really have enjoyed that episode. It keeps bubbling up. Sarah, would you like to take our next one?
Yes, this one is another 5-star rating. Thank you all so much for all these 5-star ratings. It is by Nikki Locke, and it's titled The Podcast I Knew Somewhere. She writes, I heard about this podcast in Facebook World. It was the best news ever. Wow, that's cool. I've not been disappointed. This is a podcast for the true, loyal, and intelligent Monkees fan. It's refreshing to hear discussion that is full of admiration, that is smart, and is able to embrace some of the flaws of the Monkees as well, which some fans just won't acknowledge. It's wonderful to listen to these episodes and find myself smiling and nodding the whole time. Another review said it was like hanging out and talking with all the Monkees friends you wish you had. Thank you, Zilch. If you are a Monkees fan, this podcast is the podcast for you. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki Locke. That's fantastic. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's a great one. Speaking of amazing, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mr. Craig Cohen, lead guitar.
For this amazing headline from FOB74 in a 5-star review, it's titled Hober Reber Sabasobin Hobasiba Snick.
That's easy for you to say.
Hober Reber Sabasobin Hobasiba Snick. And it reads, wow, I never realized how many Monkees nerds like myself that are out there. I thought I was the only kid in the 80s holding his boombox up to the TV to record the music. Thanks, Rhino. You guys are doing a phenomenal job between the reviews, the band history, the TV episodes, and interviews, etc. Very informative and a ton of fun to listen to. Keep it up. Been a longtime Monkees fan, and this podcast serves a truly underrated and overlooked group of talent. The just us they deserve. Hashtag Monkees in the Hall of Fame.
See how they work justice in there, huh?
Yes.
Clever. Clever, you cheeky monkey, you. So, what monkey TV shows or what monkey music are you listening to or watching? Let's go around the board. And Craig, what Monkees TV shows, or maybe it's been Head or something, or what Monkees music have you been listening to, and what would you recommend to our wonderful friends in the audience?
Ken, I've actually been rolling up my sleeves and getting dirty with the, I guess for lack of a better word, I don't know what the official name for it is, but the Yellow Box set that came out, the, I guess the handmade set for the first album. That we're going to be talking about at some point, I know. So really been going through a lot of the supplemental material on that. And I guess I can say if you haven't gotten it yet and you're thinking about it, get it, I guess, before the limited run sells out if it hasn't already.
A stunning recommendation from the lovely Craig Cohen. Melanie?
Well, I've been doing a script-to-screen comparison for the episode Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth, which I've been blogging about on Tumblr and Facebook. I'm about halfway through that, so that's been my main focus in recent days.
Excellent. And we love to see all the stuff you do on your Monkees Magic Facebook page and on the Zilch Facebook page as well. Excellent stuff as always. Sarah, how about you?
I've been reading a lot of what Melanie's been writing on the script-to-screen discussions on Monkees Magic. I think it's wonderful that you've been able to get a hold of so many of those old scripts, and it's really fascinating to see how things translate from script to screen, like you said, and I hope we can work those scripts into our commentary discussions more often. Aside from that, I haven't been watching a whole lot of Monkees per se, but the others here today know what I'm talking about. I've actually been watching a top secret something that was given to us that we will be doing a really special project on in the months to come. Was that, you know, teasy enough?
Yes, it was. Ooh. Very cryptic. I'm scared.
Yes.
I myself am deeply jealous.
Yes, it's a very rare piece of monkey-related stuff, and that is all I'm going to say.
Uh-huh. Well, we have some plans. As Craig mentioned, we're going to be doing the Yellow Box set at some point. Ghosty will be joining myself and Jeff Geringer as we discuss the Lost Monkees 45 for the first Monkees album. We're also working on something to do with books, right, Sarah?
Yes, we are going to be in the next few months recording a episode on basically the best monkeys related books and zines that are out there that have to do with the monkeys. I'll be talking through some of my favorite books in the genre, and hopefully I can get some of my fellow co-hosts in on the conversation as well. And we're hoping to get some, also incorporate some interviews with people who were involved in the monkey business fanzine era. If you have any particular memories of those times or were very involved in the fanzine, if you could contact me on the Facebook page, on the Zilch Facebook group, we would be delighted to talk to you, and I'd love to talk to you about possibly being a part of that episode.
Excellent. And Melanie and I also have some devious plans. We have two first-generation monkey fans that we are going to do interviews with and talk about what it was like to be a first-generation monkey fan. So Zilch is always moving forward, always moving ahead, and always monkeying around. So sounds like fun, right, guys?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm Fred Velez. My new book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkeys from a Fan's Perspective, chronicles my experiences with the monkeys from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the monkeys touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkeys from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, CreateSpace.com, Smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.
Here we are on the Zilch Hotline, and I am joined by the lovely Jody Blau-Ritson. How are you doing today, Jody?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself, Ken?
Hanging in there. The monkey guys are always busy. Mickey and Peter are going to be touring, and Michael Nesmith is going to be at Chiller Theater, and you're going to see him there. You have some other news for us.
Yes, I'm very, very excited, because after this type of winter that we've had, is going to be awesome that this time next year we're doing a cruise with Mickey Dolenz. We're taking the Monkeys Convention to sea.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing a cruise called the Flower Power Cruise. The host of the cruise is going to be none other than Mickey Dolenz, and he's going to be performing and hosting all week on this cruise that goes to Cozumel, Mexico and to the Florida Keys. And he's bringing along a couple of amazing friends with him.
We'll get to see other great musical acts like Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders, The Turtles featuring Flo and Eddie, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Felix Cavalieri's The Rascals, The Grassroots, The Guess Who, Herman's Hermits featuring Peter Noon and Jefferson Starship. So that's pretty cool. So along with all these great bands, you also get live nightly performances, artist meets and greets, round the clock, interactive programs with the stars, including cooking demonstrations, hosted game shows, panel discussions, wine tasting, trivia games, make love not war vow renewals, wonderful reminiscing, and more. Special themed events include a blacklight ball, psychedelic 60s dance party, bell bottom blast, and more. So they can find all that on your website. When does this happen?
Sailing February 29th to March 5th, 2016. There's going to be live nightly performances, artist meet and greets, round-the-clock interactive programs, including cooking demonstrations with the stars, hosted game shows, panel discussions, wine tasting. I want to get drunk with Mickey. That's my goal. Trivia games, make love, not war, vow renewals, wonderful reminiscing, and more. Special themed events, including a blacklight ball, psychedelic 60s dance party, and bell-bottom blast, and more. The opportunity of a lifetime. What is really cool about this is that when I was approached about bringing along all my monkeys friends, the main thing was that there had to be payment plans, because I know that this is expensive. And sure enough, there are going to be payment plans. So by putting down a minimum of $200, you will be able to get your room on the cruise. Mm-hmm. You can share, you can get a room by yourself. You can share with, I think, up to four or five people in a cabin. It's going to be on the celebrity ship called the Constellation. we already have 60 rooms sold. There's going to be a lot of Monkees fans there. If you call and sign up and say that you're coming for the Monkees convention, Mickey and I have some very special events that we're doing just for Monkees fans. All you have to do is call the number. It is 1-844-700-3569. Again, that is, I sound like an infomercial, don't I, Ken? That is 844-700-3569. Call and tell them that you are interested in the Flower Power Cruise. They will give you information so that you will know exactly what your payment plans will be. We leave out of Fort Lauderdale on February 29th of 2016. So we have a whole year to be able to plan. We have a whole year to be able to get bathing suit ready. I'm going to start the gym tonight. I swear, I really am. And we're going to be able to sit at the pool. This is what I was telling my husband last night. I'm going to sit at the pool, and I'm going to be in a bathing suit having cocktails with Mickey and Peter Noon in their bathing suits, you know, just hanging out for a week. So I'm very excited, but it's very important. You can either contact me for information on Facebook or email me at themonkeesconvention2016.com, or you can call that number, like I said, 844-700-3569, and get all the information about the Flower Power Cruise.
That sounds great. And there's something else that you have going on with Mickey Dolenz. Would you like to talk about that?
Mickey Dolenz is going to be doing a very unique type of show in New York in July. It's at a place called 54 Below, and it's a cabaret type show. It only holds 150 people in the venue. And once again, Mickey agreed that if I do my bus trip, that he will be signing autographs and he will be taking pictures. It's a group shot, actually, with those who sign up through me. So again, they can go to monkeesconvention2016.com. There's different prices on there. You don't have to take the bus. I am just offering a discounted price and also the opportunity to get your picture and autograph for free from Mickey. And this show is called A Little Bit Broadway, A Little Bit Rock and Roll. And just like the title of it, you're going to be seeing Mickey sing some of the Monkees hits, which we all love, but then he's also going to be doing something unique. He's going to be singing Broadway hits. He'll be doing stuff from, you know, he was in Aida. He'll be doing some from Aida. He'll be doing stuff from Grease. And he told me he's going to be doing songs that he's never performed before. So that's going to be Tuesday, July 7th. And then we have another one on Friday, July 10th, and Saturday, July 11th. All the information is on monkeesconvention2016.com. Or again, you can go to my Facebook page, Monkees Convention or Jody Ritson. All the information's there, but you have to order your tickets through me in order to be able to take advantage of the free stuff that Mickey is going to be doing for us. But 150 people, every seat is amazing. And he was very, very excited about it because he's never done anything like this. So it's not going to be your typical Mickey show. It's not the same band because this is a cabaret thing. I'm very excited. I'm going all 3 days, obviously. And then Chiller in April, I'll be there with Mike Nesmith all 3 days, April 24th to the 26th. Again, signing autographs. And I did make something available on the website. And if people want to email me, there are many, many people that cannot come to Chiller but have been asking me about getting Nesmith's autograph. Uh-huh. On either something that they already have or on an autograph 8x10 that I can send them. So if you have anything that you want signed by Nesmith, go on monkeesconvention2016.com, get the information, and you can email me directly, and I'll be able to help you if you email the site. And if you have anything that you want to send to me, I will get it autographed. Of course, there's a fee. The fee is not my fee. It's the fee that's charged. I've got people sending stuff from England that they already have the other guy's signatures on, but they don't have Nesmith's signatures on.
Right.
And I'm just trying to help people be able to get that last piece of history if they're not able to do it themselves. So all these great things are coming up with the Monkees. And I don't know. I heard a rumor that they may be touring Australia next year, too.
Wow, that'd be amazing. Well, I want to thank you for giving us some of the scoop. And we look forward to whatever is going on with the monkeys. And thank you, as always, for being part of this.
I really appreciate it. And for anything coming up, always, anybody can go to monkeysconvention2016.com. And I keep everything up there so that anybody can contact me at any time. We have cool shirts up there, cool autographs, you name it, we've got it.
Excellent. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Ken. I wish you all the best. This show's awesome.
Thank you. Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart recorded 4 demos for the pilot episode of The Monkees. Here is their demo version of the theme from The Monkees.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. We don't have time to get restless. There's always something new.
So today we're doing the color cast commentary for Monkees in a Ghost Town. A lot of people don't take into account what was going on while the shows were being filmed, because many times the boys would also be recording at the night or in the morning, or, you know, it was a very hectic set, right, ladies?
Yeah, especially farther on, once we got into the fall and the winter, when they were actually doing performances as well. But yeah, they were recording even in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Now, The Monkees in a Ghost Town was probably filmed between Monday, July 11th and Friday, July 15th. Let's take a look at what had been going on around that time. No episode had been filmed the previous week, which included the July 4th holiday, so they got that off, thankfully. On Saturday, July 9th, Boyce and Hart were doing a recording session, and they worked on the backing vocals for This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day, and Craig Cohen's favorite monkey song, Let's Dance On. And of course, the album version of the theme song. So this is when that track was being worked on. They also recorded the instrumental backing tracks for Take a Giant Step, I'll Be True to You, and Saturday's Child. Backing vocals were also recorded for Saturday's Child during the session. No monkeys were involved in any of these sessions.
The filming schedules during the first season, especially during that first summer, were approximately one calendar week long, usually Monday through Friday. And this was the 7th episode in. They started right at the very end of May and had done 5 episodes right in a row, and then had a week off at the beginning of July. Uh-huh. And then came back to do this episode right after that. So that recording session was the Saturday before they started making this episode.
On Wednesday, July 13th, there was another Boyce and Hart recording session, and they added more backing vocals to I'll Be True to You. And once again, no monkeys were involved.
So I guess there is no monkey shenanigans or monkey business going on there.
From what I've heard, that probably made the recording sessions go a little smoother in those early days.
Yeah, so. Because there's that famous story where, Sarah, you know what I'm talking about, where they would let them into the studio, and then there was a rule. No more than one monkey was allowed in the studio at a time for a while.
Right. Apparently, they got into a big dog pile the first time they had all 4 monkeys in there at the same time to record the theme song or whatever it was. And, of course, Kirshner could know that he could get through a session without, like, having beverages dumped on his head.
Which is always a plus, especially if you're wearing a suit.
One thing to keep in mind for this particular week was this episode was, I think,
probably filmed entirely on location. There was no scenes on the pad or in an indoor set that probably wasn't on the Columbia Ranch. So they probably were some distance out of town during the day. So that would have made it a little more difficult to have an evening recording session.
Uh-huh.
What other shows, you may or may not know this, and I apologize if I'm springing on this on you. What other shows or even what other Monkees episodes were shot at the Columbia Ranch?
Well, as far as Monkees episodes are concerned, I think they used the Columbia Ranch for a lot of the exteriors, town settings, frontier settings.
It's a nice place to visit. Looks like it was probably done there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And Monkees in Texas and Hillbilly Honeymoon was probably there. I don't know these for a fact, but it was sort of their official, semi-official, home away from home kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I suppose a lot of the Screen Gems series must have used that same location.
It seems like you see that small town or variations of it in a lot of sitcoms from that era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is from Sandoval's book. It's not regarding recording session. It's actually regarding the filming, which is a rare thing in Sandoval's book. He must have come across an invoice for a particular artist's work because he notes that on Thursday of that week, there was an outside pianist brought in to play the tack piano on the set of the TV show, presumably for Rosemary's musical numbers.
And what numbers they were.
Yes. Two. The number was two.
Yes.
Lenny, let him do the number. Then shoot him.
Bessie, we'd be honored if you'd do the number with us.
Everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me. Nobody but me.
Well, that's okay, Bessie. We'll try something a little more up.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, good idea. You say, hi neighbor, hi neighbor, throw all your troubles away. Come on and shake.
It's a telephone mover. Go use it.
Grin to the rest. It makes you feel so grand to get your chin off your chest. I'm sure.
And this is the moment where I really hope my brother does not listen to this podcast, because he'd be rolling my eyes right now when I ask this dumb question. But what is a tack piano?
Sandoval actually talks about that. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's basically the rinky-dink kind of piano sound.
Yeah, that old player piano that you hear in every saloon and every Western kind of a thing.
Well, I think it has to do with the kind of hammers that
has a different kind of hammer that hits the strings, I think. Yeah.
It seems like they wrapped up filming on Friday, July 15th. And on July 16th, there was a shared recording session for Mike Nesmith and Boyce and Hart. All four Monkees are present. Lead and backing vocals are recorded for The Kind of Girl I Could Love, All the King's Horses, Papa Jean's Blues, I'll Be True to You, So Goes Love, and I Don't Think You Know Me with Mickey's lead, and of course Craig Cohen's favorite Monkees song, Let's Dance On. So Craig, you should be thankful, because on Saturday, July 16th, way back then, that's when your song was cut. So,
well, if you think about it, Let's Dance On was used in the pilot, so they had to re-record that song with the Monkees' vocals on it in mm-hmm. order to broadcast the pilot, because when they used it originally for the test audiences, it wasn't the Monkees singing, it was Boyce and Hart singing.
And of course, all that was in Andrew Sandoval's book for the most part. Everything can be found there, and we all recommend that book.
And that book is The Monkees, the day-by-day story of a 60s TV pop sensation by the wonderful Andrew Sandoval, who we all really hope one day is able to revise this edition, because I think a lot of people would be interested in a new edition. But but this is readily available where fine books are sold. It is not in an ebook edition. If you don't own this book and you are a Monkees fan who is really into the trivia and all the kind of nerdy stuff we talk about on the podcast, this is very much worth picking out.
We all recommend it so highly.
Speak for yourself. I don't talk about nerdy things.
The geek shall inherit the earth, Melanie. This is a compliment.
I talk about geeky things.
Fair point.
And from the July 16th recording sessions,
Here's part of an alternate stereo take of The Kind of Girl I Could Love, available on the Rhino Handmade set of the Monkees.
This is 10. Slow it down just a little bit, Hank.
Well, I guess it's time for the ColorCast commentary. Melanie, we're going to give you the big remote. Click away.
Oh my god, it has too many buttons. I don't know which one to push.
Just hit that one that says monkeys.
Okay.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. You know what? It's 7:30, 6:30 Central Time. It's time for the monkeys. I wonder if anybody around here's got a television set.
Can you give me a warp 8?
Aye, sir. And maybe a wee bit more. I'll sit on the warp engines myself and nurse them.
That position, Mr. Scott, would not only be unavailing, but also undignified.
Come on, baby. Did you miss me? Are you still madly in love with me, huh?
Well.
How about a little smooch? You're my kind of dame.
I hardly even know you, Robin.
Kissing is a great way to get acquainted, sweetheart.
But, Robin, I wouldn't want you to get the wrong impression of me. I'm not the type of girl to kiss a boy on the first crime.
What we wanted to play was on the
Cribbage. Cribbage? How do you play Cribbage?
Yes, wildlife, the monkeys, who tonight will be seen in the clever disguise of Davy Jones, Mickey Dolenz, and Mike Nesmith.
How close will we come to the nearest Klingon outpost if we continue on our present course?
1 parsec, sir. Close enough to smell them.
That is illogical, Ensign. Odors cannot travel through the vacuum of space.
The Monkees, brought to you by Kellogg.
K-double-L-O-double-good. Kellogg's best to you.
Tonight's Monkees ColorCast commentary is brought to you by April's Laundromat. When life's journey puts you on a detour through a vast reservoir of untapped dirt, come to April's Laundromat, where the latest scientific advances in laundry science guarantee a clean getaway. Bring a friend and get your suds half off. Open 7 days a week, convenient to the beach in Malibu.
Hello and welcome back to this Monkees ColorCast commentary. And this week we are going to be talking about monkeys in a ghost town. As always, I'm Craig Cohen. And I'm joined, as always, by monkey magic author Melanie Mitchell. Melanie, welcome.
Hi, Craig.
And we have a special guest sitting in for Jeff Hewlett today, the one and only podfather himself, Ken Mills. Ken, welcome to the ColorCast commentary.
Why, thank you, thank you, thank you, one and all.
Oh my God, the boss is in the house. Somebody hide the liquor.
I am not worthy to tie Jeff's shoes, but here I am.
We're glad you're here, and we're glad you were able to fill in Jeff's absence. So, Melanie, before we jump into Monkeys in a Ghost Town, it seems like every commentary now we have some housekeeping to take care of, if you will, from the previous episode. So, do you want to update us on what you found out?
You guys keep asking questions, I'll keep coming back with answers. I want to start with a correction. I had talked about some of the interview segments in the past and insisted that they must have done some editing because they only use one camera. A Facebook follower named Michael Lynch contacted me this week, and he pointed out some of the very subtle details that'll come up in today's interview segment at the end of Monkeys in a Ghost Town that pretty much prove that they had to have had two cameras when they did the interview. There are just some places where they shift from one angle to another that you can tell that it was not edited. So credit goes to Michael Lynch and his eagle eyes.
That is awesome, and that's why I love that. Our Facebook community so much, be it on the Zilch page or on your Monkey Magic page. Some of the interactions we've had there have just been really, really awesome. And also, people get to vote for their MVM, their most valuable monkey. So it's definitely a really, really cool resource for us and for the listeners.
And speaking of the Facebook fans, I have to give credit to Jamie Lynn Prada, who gave me the clue I needed to find out where the airport scenes were filmed. She pointed out that the same airport scenes were used in another episode later on, and when I went to that episode and listened to the commentary track, I found out that it was shot at the Burbank Airport. So thanks so much, Jamie Lynn, for giving me that clue. Also following up from Success Story, I have to say, no, that is not a wedding band that Mickey is wearing. It is a plain gold ring, but it's on his right hand, not his left.
Yes.
And finally, the question came up. Jeff asked about how much it cost to mail a letter in 1966. He was concerned about that $1.80 that the messenger was asking for. Jeff, the answer is 5 cents for a first-class letter within the U.S., minimum postage from the UK to the US was 23 pence. Considering that minimum wage in 1966 was $1.25, $1.80 was the equivalent of an hour and a half's work at the minimum wage.
Wow.
So I would guess that to be somewhere around $13 or $14 today. So no, that was not postage. That was a telegram.
All right. Well, we always enjoy the extra little bit of research you do for us, Melanie, when we throw those questions out your way. And I know I definitely get a kick out of it, and I think everybody listening does as well. So thank you.
I think you study up ahead of time and come up with the most obscure things to ask me, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, you give me too much credit, Melanie.
So where do you guys rank this episode, like, as favorites? I'm not asking for an exact number, but is it one of your favorites, or
out of all the episodes? Yeah, out of all the episodes we've watched so far, I rate it pretty highly.
I do too.
Well, one of the things I love about this episode is that we see a lot of show opening moments, and what I mean by that, and you can look for them as we go through the episode. Like, for example, we all know the scene from the opening where Peter sniffs the flower and he's in the French Foreign Legion outfit. That's in this episode, you know, and we see a lot of things that are in the show opening in this episode, and it's so cool. And it must have been one that really helped the public consciousness, you know, that really got in there, because it seems like there's a lot of those moments that we see, like the monkeys going back and forth to the beach, you know, mm-hmm. running back and forth. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we can hit all those moments as they roll around. And another thing that we noticed about this episode is the caliber of guest stars. So, Ken, do you want to talk about Lon Chaney Jr.?
Well, this guy is a legend to horror film fans, especially. He and his father basically wrote the book on what it was to be a horror film actor. For example, Lon Chaney Jr. was the Wolfman. And, you know, you may not know that if you just watch this. And not only that, he went on to have a very successful career. And his biggest role that he's probably best known for is his work as Lenny in of Mice and Men.
Right.
And the movie adaptation of that book that we all had to read in school. But it is amazing to see him and Rose Marie and the third gentleman that rounds out the villain cast. Who is that, Melanie?
Len Lesser plays George in this episode.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people may know him as Uncle Leo from Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's wild. That was mind-blowing.
A much beloved character, or tolerated character.
Tolerated character, yes.
I'll never forget when he had the eyebrows disappear, you know. I think they were burned off or something. I can't remember, but anyway.
Also, Len Lesser was one of those actors who appeared on The Monkees twice. He'll show up again in Monkees in Texas.
Ah, very cool.
And speaking of guest stars, one that we don't get to see is Mel Blanc, who did the voice of Bugs and Daffy and so many great characters. They brought him in to do the Monkey Mobile as it's coughing and sputtering and it dies. That's him. So that's kind of amazing.
That is very, very cool.
I saw that on IMDb when I was researching it, and I thought, I find it so hard to believe that they would bring in the best voice artist in Hollywood just to do 5 to 10 seconds of sputtering car noises. But IMDb says it is so. The Monkees Film and TV Vault says it is so. So I must believe it.
He must have owed somebody a favor.
Mm-hmm. You don't think it's a SAG thing, like, hey, we got to get Mel Blanc on this. So.
Well, actually, James Frawley did a lot of the voice work on this show. But in this particular case, it apparently was not James Frawley.
Yeah, and he directed this episode, and it was written by Robert Schlitt and Peter Meyerson, who we previously saw their work on Royal Flush. And you were saying earlier to me off air, Melanie, that these are the same gentlemen that wrote Rosemary's other episode,
Monkey Mother.
Yeah, so very cool. So always good to see familiar names and the episode connections that they create.
The other big star who appeared in this episode was Rose Marie, and she started out in vaudeville at the age of 3 under the name Baby Rose Marie. Her full name is Rose Marie Mazzetta, but she never appeared under that name. So she's kind of like Cher or Prince. You know, she was a star who only had her first name.
Wow.
Innovator.
I did not pick up on that.
She appeared in an early talking movie in 1929 at the age of 6. It was 8 minutes long, and she's the only person on the screen just singing. And the title was Baby Rose Marie. She worked in radio as both a singer and a comedian. Mm-hmm. And before she made her big break on the Dick Van Dyke Show, she appeared on Gunsmoke, The Bob Cummings Show, The Many Lives of Dobie Gillis, and My Sister Eileen. But, of course, the Dick Van Dyke Show was her big starring role, 5 years, and one of the top shows in the history of comedy television. She was also a regular on the Hollywood Squares and had a recurring role in recent decades on the show Murphy Brown. And I'm happy to say that she is still alive and well at the age of 91, and IMDb shows that she has a role in a movie that's in production right now.
Ah, awesome. Yeah. Very cool. All right, so with that said, I guess we're ready to jump into the episode?
Mm-hmm.
I think we are.
All right, and we will start. What's that?
I'm nervous.
You'll do fine, Ken. So we will start in 3, 2, 1.
And here's the Monkey Mobile. And, you know, if they would have spent all the money that they did on this car, they probably never would have had to pay their rent like 3 years. And there's the sign, 12 miles to Clerksville. And
I don't
know
that.
If anyone picked up on it, but the shirts have now been changed from red to multicolored.
Oh.
It was a 2-day trip. There's your solution. They had to spend the night somewhere.
Mickey's chewing that pencil. I'm worried about lead poisoning for him.
I love the idea that they went 150 miles past where they were supposed to go before they realized that they had missed their turn.
I love that Mickey is navigating with a sextant and a slide rule.
I love that trap light there. Ah, it's a hot day. Look at all that.
Yeah.
Mike really does look frustrated in this episode. Ting!
I gotta say, this is actually a very well-maintained ghost town. Mm-hmm. I mean, the doors and the windows are all intact. The traffic light still works. The telephone still works.
And they're not all wearing the gray pants, so we are evolving in our wardrobe choices.
I love this shared imagination sequence that's coming up here where Mike actually duplicates himself.
Yeah.
If Mike talking to Mike. I don't think we have another instance of that sort of shared imagination.
I was just chalking it up to Davey's chewing something that's giving him a hallucination. So, because he's chewing on that weed.
And doesn't Mike do something similar to that in 33 and a Third?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Naked Persimmon.
Yeah.
Good point. Yes. Peter played the triangle in high school. Believe that.
That's a big one, though. Well, this is a lot of action for just before the beginning. I mean, you got a lot for that stinger.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stingers so far because it really makes you want to get back to the action. I mean, as much as we love hearing the opening song, you see these guys running towards them with guns and you say, hey, let's get back to the action here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I noticed that they have a sort of a time warp thing going on here because the bad guys are dressed in sort of 20s era clothing, mm-hmm. using a Tommy gun. The car we'll see later when the big man arrives is a very old car. So you have a sort of double historical reference here. The Wild West, which is like probably 1900, 1890, plus the 1920s gangsters.
Yeah.
Anytime the monkeys travel out of Los Angeles, they tend to go into time warps.
Yeah. And it looks like they tend to do Kellogg's commercials.
Yeah, well, that too.
By the way, did you guys ever notice that Mickey throws his drumstick at the end of that opening? Check it out next time you're watching it.
Okay.
Boy.
Yeah, so there we are with Len Lesser and
dancing already. You know, someone shooting at your feet, you're supposed to start dancing. So there they go, a little bit of movement.
This is certainly the most gunfire we've had in any episode so far.
Mm-hmm.
Now you mentioned earlier that Lon Chaney played Lenny in Of Mice and Men. The other main character in Of Mice and Men was named George, and that is the name of our second gangster here. The relationship between these two is very similar to the relationship between George and Lenny in the movie and the book. So I don't know if this was a reaction to hiring Lon Chaney that they decided to go with the Of Mice and Men sort of theme, or if it was they started with the Of Mice and Men theme and then decided to hire Lon Chaney. I don't know which order it happened in.
I'm not even sure which turn of events I like better because they both seem like really cool ways for something to happen.
Well, I have a copy of an earlier draft of the script, and it's not at all like the relationship that these two have in the final episode. So clearly at some point a decision was made to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lenny was going for an Oscar-worthy performance there a little bit ago, mm-hmm. and now here's Peter and Mickey.
I love this breaking the fourth wall.
So, Melanie, actually, you were talking about first draft scripts or scripts for episodes. And on your website and on Facebook, you've been doing breakdowns of some of those scripts, right?
Yeah, I've blogged this one from soup to nuts, and it's very interesting. There were a lot of changes. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them while we're running, but hopefully in the show notes we can put a link, because it's really very interesting how this changed.
I've never understood the point of that game where you throw cards into a hat. I just never got that.
I never even paid attention to what they were doing with the cards. I love the light bulb joke.
Yeah. So
I loved Peter's reaction at the end of it. Like, he was so happy that that gag went off the way it did.
Look at these suits. Are they not killer? Peter's. And this is this the first time in the TV show that we've seen Mickey's James Cagney impersonation?
I believe so.
We would see
certainly it. Won't be the last.
That's right.
Look, but I do that. Like Peter's spider.
Yeah. Look at that silk shirt Mickey has. My God.
God, talk about 33 and a third. Wasn't he wearing a black silk shirt? 33 and a third.
Yeah, when he sang the tripped out version of I'm a Believer. Speaking of suits, I don't really care for George's, the blue one. Mm-hmm. Looks like you should be selling ice cream or something.
Yeah. Well, they're not big time hoods.
No, and I love Peter's voice.
Yeah, and I also love that Mickey's got a scar on his face.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch.
To conjure up suits, but you know you got to have the scar.
Yeah.
I gotta say that this scene, and I don't know, it might be the blue coat, but this seems like one of the better looking episodes. You know, on this on these Rhino sets. The quality seems to differ from episode to episode, but this episode in general seems like it's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, some of the worst scratches on it are when Mike is facing himself as the gunslinger. Stay tuned for Mickey's next idea. Everybody's reunited now.
They're gonna throw them into the jail cell, still wearing their sharp gangster outfits, but in a moment they're going to be back in their ordinary clothes.
See, I shouldn't be surprised that they were, you know, did the red shirt thing when you take this into account.
I think the scenes at the very beginning in the Monkey Mobile when they were wearing the red shirts were probably like file footage that they had just filmed randomly, whereas the scenes where they're all coughing and drying out in the desert were specifically filmed for this episode. And talking about coughing and drying out in the desert, somebody needs to explain the difference between the desert and the beach. Yeah.
exactly. Mike looks too damn happy. And here we go. This was basic. Them running back and forth to the beach there. That was what I did every day after I graduated from high school back in the 80s. We went to the beach. And there's the famous flower sniffing and... gosh, man. I
love it with a camel. And that is a lot of fun. Well,
what do you think of Davey doing those kicks, Craig?
They were pretty good. I mean, he was pretty convincing. I think he would have made a good light heavyweight or a cruiserweight a wrestler.
A lot of these sequences in the striped bathing suits were just so much fun.
Mm-hmm. You would never catch me in one of these striped bathing suits.
I don't know. I think you'd pull it off, Ken.
I love this bouncy, bouncy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do look like they're having a lot of fun, but there we go with the violence again. But yeah, they just, you know, falling on sand is not comfortable.
No, that actually hurts.
Yeah.
There's Peter going down the hill. We see that in the starting all the time.
Just about indestructible.
When you're young, you're indestructible. You're stupid, but you're indestructible.
Yeah.
Chasing the surf.
And the
That's
back.
An iconic moment.
Yep. And here they're getting a lot of use from the stock footage at the film library.
Yep. Yeah.
I like this endless line of monkeys.
Yeah, it never ends. And they continue it on as they walk around in circles in the jail cell.
Yep.
Cut to...
That was Tomorrow's Going to Be Another Day, and in 1967 they used words for that scene.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything about a substitution in the Saturday morning reruns. I couldn't find any information about that.
So wait a second, are they in the police station or no, it's like an old saloon, but if you look on the wall, there's like wanted posters and
Yeah, this is the sheriff's office. They'll move to the saloon later.
Ah, I was
two different sets.
Yeah. Well, if you don't pay real attention, they'll move universes on you if you're not careful. By the way, did you notice Mickey clanking his hand in the sound of a tin cup?
Oh.
Yeah, I wonder if they had Mel Blanc do that too. So they're going to try to...
I always this is a ball with a shovel.
Yeah. It's such a complex plan. They're going to play baseball, dig a hole, and play music at the same time.
And there's the mouse. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Be careful with that mouse, Len. Don't pet it too much.
Oh, no.
I will kiss him and love him and call him George.
So... Mike's going to conjure up a guitar so they can have the sound of their baseball game.
A bunch of peers. And not only that, they wind up in suits. And
so this is an interesting sequence. Every time they emerge from the hole, they see a different scene. Some of them are quite pleasant. I don't know why Peter didn't just climb out of the hole and say, hey, there's the surfers, we're home.
Yeah, I know.
But instead, he could have. Some of them were supposed to be scary, but.
Yeah, he could have hung out with Frankie and Annette.
Yep. So they've got baseball caps and a real bat now. it's actually a very fun game that, you know, the camera work is really a lot of fun.
I love the look of this performance.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I think it's the lighting and the coloring.
Mm-hmm. More film library stuff there.
Oh, yeah. And at a moment, we're going to see Lenny with an umpire uniform on.
Yes.
So he's
home. Ah.
Okay, that's one I'd run away from.
Yeah. Here comes a train.
Yeah. But I think one of my favorite whole emergence moments are when Peter emerges into this performance of the monkeys and looks perplexed. And then I think as Mike emerges into a baseball game, actual baseball game.
And I think Davey's got four maracas in each hand.
I was trying to count that, Ken. I wasn't sure if it was three or four. That's a lot of maracas, though.
And two of them were red, so.
Red. I wonder if they would dare him to see how many he could play at one time. It was a challenge.
I wonder what the Guinness record is for that.
He's taking.
So they managed to dig into the cell next door.
Yeah, and that happens so fast that if you don't pay attention 100%, you don't even know what just happened. Because they jump right back from it. And here comes the big man.
Yeah. I love the way they bring her in. The clomp, clomp, clomp on the wooden sidewalk outside. Oh, my goodness.
Does it sound a bit like Cagney?
Oh. I just love the job that Rosemary does with this role. She is so tough. And the timing of it is just wonderful. I ain't the welcome wagon. And what do you suppose happened to the big man? Do you think she killed him?
Yeah.
Why not? I would. Ooh, a couple quick chops there.
Yeah.
she sprayed him right out like a boss.
So for a moment there, the monkeys are happy until they find out that she's not. No one to toy with.
There's a lot of dirt on that floor. I know it's an abandoned thing, but good Lord.
Yeah.
Have some respect in your hideout.
So I love the way they keep, you know, hinting that maybe she's going to relent, and then she turns around and says, we'll kill him anyway. Yes. Over and over again. It keeps happening.
And Mike's going to appeal to her.
Yeah.
Musical background.
Mm-hmm. And she really was a, you know,
lounge singer, radio performer. The name Rosemarie would bring a thrill to hearts. It's a true thing.
Well, of course, back in the vaudeville days, you know, you weren't just a singer, you weren't just an actor. You had to do everything. Mm-hmm. They used to have a term called triple threat. You could play the piano, sing, and in an emergency move the piano. So you had to do everything.
Then shoot them.
These poor guys that keep getting their hopes dashed.
Yeah.
Up and down. Oh, here we go.
Great. Now we're in the saloon.
Yeah.
So they moved to the saloon to do the singing since there was a piano there. And I did a little digging and discovered this is the same set where they did the cantina performance of What Am I Doing Hanging Around in the Mexican episode, It's a Nice Place to Visit.
Ah, cool.
There's a flight of stairs you can just see behind them as they perform. And, of course, the joke is that Bessie or Big Man or whatever she is called is a terrible singer, but, of course, Rosemarie is actually a very good singer.
Now, we see this gentleman who's an Indian. I believe we see him later as the character from Gunsmoke. I think it's the same actor.
Consensus is you're probably right. I posed side-by-side pictures of them on the Monkey Magic site, and everyone seemed to agree that it's the same guy. IMDb doesn't list them, so I have no idea who the actor or actors is or are. But they could very well be the same guy.
I think it's funny that they have the Indian answer the phone, and he's got an old-timey, like, 20s phone. And then he sets that one down and gets a modern one with a bunch of buttons.
Well, Dave is calling on an old-fashioned phone, so it's connected to another old-fashioned phone.
Well, Lenny is smitten.
Look. Yeah.
He really does sell this part. I mean, it's not a great part, but he really does sell it.
Yeah.
Everyone does here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you hear this song too much, preparation for this episode, it made me not want to hear it again. So.
Well, in the script, the original ending was that the big man kept singing and singing and singing until everyone fell asleep. I swear to God, there was no gunfire in the script.
And look, he's got a hat like Woody from Toy Story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's the same actor. It played the Indian.
Definitely seems like it.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't play the police officer later.
I checked that today. I don't think it's the same guy, but I'm not 100% positive. The police officer doesn't have that same cleft chin, which was the most prominent feature that those two characters had, was that cleft chin. So could be not. Hard to tell.
Mike is really scrambling to try to get this done.
Yeah, just happens to have a copy of the show's theme song.
Mm-hmm. And drum set.
Is that the first time we're seeing Peter play a six string on the show?
Yeah, because Mike's playing the piano.
Yeah.
Of course, Red Maracas. So.
Of course, it's interesting that they had Mike playing the piano and Peter's actually the keyboardist in the band, but... it was necessary for the plot.
Necessary for the plot, Dave's got the gun now.
Much better ending than the one in the script where they all just fell asleep.
Yeah. I love how Mike turns the piano on so they can have a fight with music.
Yeah. Yes. It's a player piano karaoke machine.
Did you notice that when Peter ran around the bar, he didn't have the guitar, but then a second later, he had it in his hand again?
Good catch. Here.
Somebody's falling asleep.
And now it's gone again.
And Davey's going to turn the infinite ammo cheat on.
But not before we have this wonderful carnival game. Oh, I love this. They all do such a wonderful job with this carnival game. And they each do it differently, but each version of it is just so wonderfully funny. Mm-hmm. I can just see the improv work that they've been taught, you know, coming into play.
I love Mike's arm thing that he
does. Yeah. Also notice that Lenny never puts down the maracas. Never.
Wow.
He holds on to those maracas for the rest of the episode.
Go Pete.
Now it's time to start shooting.
Yeah. Now I believe the infinite cheat would have stayed on, but
yeah,
it's mentioned, so then it has to die.
I love that. I love the fact that they call it out, and that's when it goes away.
See, I believe that the monkeys take place in a universe where all TV shows come together, which is why we see Superman change in the booth that one, or the Penguin in another episode, and we just saw F Troop. So,
yeah. There's also a Gunsmoke reference in Monkeys in Texas.
Yeah. Well, and in this episode as well, Marshall Dillon.
Oh, true. Yes. Well, no. That was Bob Dillon.
Yeah, but...
He'll write a song about your problems. There we go. We're out of ammo now. But notice that even though we're out of ammo and he clears the chamber, tosses the gun, there's still a bullet left.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about guns, but that strikes me as very strange. Mm-hmm. Notice Lenny's still holding onto the maracas. Oh, no, he finally put them down.
Well, no one is more surprised than the monkeys that actually works, so.
Yeah.
Go, Peter.
How ironic it is that Peter would be the one to grab the Tommy gun.
Yeah.
Now we come back in after the commercial, and notice that they put handcuffs on the big man, but they haven't put handcuffs on the other two. So if you only had one pair of handcuffs, which one of these three people would you put the handcuffs on?
I would put them on Lon Chaney Jr. He could turn into a wolf man.
Exactly.
Or break your neck.
Now, see, that one officer looks like he could be that guy.
Yeah, the one who comes out and talks to them on the porch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept looking for the...
See, look, right there.
Yeah.
From that side shot, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they must have got their monies out of that guy. His money's worth.
Well, if that is the same guy, then he is an IMDb, so we can finally give him credit. But
yeah,
I didn't see it.
Check him out. You can
well,
see.
You're the one with the eagle eyes, Ken. I got to give you credit for that.
When did they get gas back in the car?
Yeah, or move it to the front of the saloon. It had run out of gas in the middle of the street.
Love this part.
Yeah, it's a nice. It's just a lovely ending.
God, that car is so decked out. Lauren St. David.
Yeah. So this is the same interview that we saw in Success Story and Your Friendly Neighborhood Kidnappers. They're all wearing blue, and the costumes are all the same, so I'm pretty sure it was all done at the same time. And but I love the way this works out. That they're goofing off with various screens and gels and things that are used on the camera. I don't know the technical terms. That's what they're talking about is the technical terms. Notice that Peter identifies it as being the symbol for a transistor.
Yes.
It actually does resemble the symbol for a transistor. I looked it up. It does kind of look like a K. But here comes Mike, and he's going to do an improv. And it's an absolutely glorious, gorgeous, magnificent improv scene that Peter jumps right into and plays along with. Davey doesn't for some reason. Davey tries to interrupt and say, no, those aren't real cards. But
yeah, Peter, but that makes it even funnier.
Yeah.
Peter knows the rules, and he's playing along. And it's a beautifully improvised scene. Wonderful way to end the episode.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of another one. And Ken, you made it.
Ah, I did.
We knew that you would. And I guess before we wrap up, we need to go through and pick our MVM, our most valuable monkey. And Ken, since you are a guest tonight, do you want to go first?
I'm going to go with Peter Tork.
Okay. Do you have any reasons?
Well, I was going to give it to Mickey because it's the first time that we see the the James Cagney imitation. But nah, I just really like how Peter can shift gears and go from being the tough guy, you know, playing off of Lenny. They have a really nice interaction, the two of them. And I just think that's my choice.
All right.
There's a charming moment in that scene where he's pretending to be the tough guy spider.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that really deep voice and the toothpick in his mouth. And then while he's embodying that character, he glances over at the cell and winks at his friends.
He does.
It's really sweet.
So, Melanie, is that your choice as well?
No, okay. I'm going to give the nod to Mike Nesmith for the improv during the interview segment.
It really was
a magnificently done improv scene.
Very, very, very cool choice. I am going to go with Mickey, mainly for his work doing the Scarface character, and then also doing the Carnival Barker type voice right before that whole gag. So we have three panelists tonight and three separate choices for Most Valuable Monkey. So very, very neat. And make sure you share your Most Valuable Monkey with us for this episode over at the Zilch Facebook page. All right, so before we go, is there anything you guys want to add?
I don't really think you could go wrong picking any of them this episode. Each one of them seems to carry a good chunk of the weight of the plot and keeping it moving. So it really is a great team effort this episode.
That's what I appreciate in a Monkees episode is team effort.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the improv school that they sent them to really pays off in this episode.
Oh,
it's very natural.
Totally. Totally. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of another Monkees Color Cast commentary. As always, we had a great time. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to tonight's Monkees Color Cast. I'm your announcer, Ghosty Timmers. Now, back to the show.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
Well, that commentary track was fun. I did pretty good for a first-timer, right, guys?
You did exceptional for a first-timer.
And we like to thank Ghosty, who does our intros and outros there. He's just amazing, and we're just so glad that he's part of the team. And, well, we want to thank you all for listening, so bid you a fond adieu, or whatever kind of adieu you wish to have, right, Craig? Anyway, well, does anybody feel like singing tonight?
No.
That's all right.
I'm happy to punch the button for Let's Dance On, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm all for that.
All right, well, sure. Someone find the button quick. Find the button quick.
Consider it punched.
See you on the next episode. Click.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burr. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Oh, dear.